This is The Spark. I'm Martha Woodruff. A few weeks ago, when we were still the not-yet-named new show, Trent Wagler came by to talk about his music. While he was here, Trent mentioned that he plays a Huss and Dalton guitar. You can hear Trent in the background on his guitar, playing with the steel wheels under all that fiddle music. And here's what Trent Wagler had to say about the instrument.
I'm very proud to play, not only because I love this guitar, it's become kind of, you know, I get on another guitar and it feels foreign to me. This has become my tool for playing music, but also just to know that it's made by people that are right here in the valley where I live. It feels right.
As Huss and Dalton guitars are made in Stanton, I smelled a road trip. So a couple of weeks ago, I packed up my equipment and my intern, and off we went to talk with Jeff Huss about guitar building.
I'm a player, obviously. Everybody that works here is a player, and that's the passion that everybody has. But I was working for a banjo company over in Rockfish Valley, Stelling Banjo Works. I worked there for about 9 years building banjos, and while I was there, I started building guitars on my own time and ended up building guitars for him under his name. And then I built a shop at home and went half-time there and half-time building my own guitars and did that for about a year and a half. And then I partnered up with Mark Dalton, and we formed this company in October of 95.
What's the difference between building a banjo and building a guitar? How come one romanced you and you could leave the other behind?
Well, we actually build banjos here, too, so we didn't leave it behind. But the difference... Guitars are wooden boxes, and banjos are more assembled from metal parts. They are wood, but they're not nearly as intricate in terms of woodworking as a guitar is. The neck on both of them is virtually the same. They're still wooden necks with fingerboards and frets and peg heads and tuners and all that. But the body of a banjo is a nuts and bolts thing more than a guitar is.
Before we had time to get really settled in the Huss and Dalton break room, my dust allergies fired up, as they're wont to do, and we were forced to move outside. So if you hear funny noises in the background, you know whom to blame.
You're a player.
Mm-hmm.
There are lots of guitars in the world. Why'd you have to build one? Or build a bunch?
Yeah, just curious nature, I guess. I was the kind of kid that as soon as I got a new bicycle, I took it all apart and put it back together so I knew how it worked. And so it's the same sort of thing. Banjo players tend to be that way because banjos you have to tinker with to keep them operating right. And so you just have a natural curiosity about how it was made and why it works the way it does, and that leads you to building them.
Before you started making guitars, what were you playing?
What kind of guitar?
Yeah.
Martin.
A Martin.
Yeah.
And it wasn't quite right?
It was a nice guitar, but I was just, you know, confident that I could probably build one that I liked just as much.
Was there anything missing in the sound, in the feel of it, in anything that you just wanted to put in a guitar?
No. Martins were my inspiration at first. That's what I thought was the coolest guitar around, and so that's what I was trying to copy at first. And my first guitars were Martin copies, basically.
Tell me about the evolution of Huss and Dalton guitars.
Well, some of our models still are based on Martin designs. But we started in October of 95. My partner Mark Dalton also worked at Stelling. He went to work there when I left. And then I knew that I couldn't grow what I wanted to do all by myself. And I knew I didn't want employees at that point because I wanted somebody that was as passionate about it and cared about it as much as I did, instead of somebody that was just coming to work for a paycheck. So I talked to Mark about partnering up, and he had come from a background of body shop. His dad had owned a body shop, and he was doing cars. Yeah, he was born with a spray gun in his hand, and that was my weak part. I was good at building guitars, but my finish work was the weakest experience I had. So it fit well, and he was into guitars and really passionate about it too, and wanted to get out of the body work, and had gone to work part time at Stelling, and then eventually full time, and. So I talked to him about partnering up, and he ended up selling what he had left of the body shop and equipment, and that's what we used to fund the beginning of this company. I already had a lot of equipment, but we needed to jig up and become a production company rather than just a one-off. And so we lived off of his investment for the first 4 or 5 months and just built tools and jigs and figured out how we were going to do each step of the operation before we actually went into production work.
Were you excited?
Yeah, it was an exciting time. It was fun. We still had our deal with Stelling where we were building guitars for him, so we knew we were going to be able to sell half of everything we made to him without having to do any marketing or anything. And then we were only going to have to figure out how to sell the other half with our own name on it. And it actually went pretty easy. We just started traveling around, taking them to music stores and selling what we were making. And
like the Retta Lynn with her... It's 45 in the bag.
Yeah.
33 or whatever
right.
it was.
That's
yeah.
right.
Would it be possible for you to take us into the shop so we
sure.
could look at construction?
Sure.
Okay.
You're going to die in there, aren't you?
In
the summer sun, 1981, the day was long till I heard the song.
We entered a large room with one big machine in its center. This machine is programmed to manufacture the small parts of guitars, which Jeff and the other workers at Huss & Dalton then assemble by hand. More about that later.
Oh, my red wings, take me softly to my home.
This is called a CNC machine. It's a computer numeric control, it's called. And it's an automated router, basically. You draw the parts that you want to mill on the machine on a computer, and then it translates all that into machining operations. And you place your pieces of wood on it, and it goes to work on them and turns a block of ebony into a bridge blank, for instance, or we'll shape a mahogany peg head on a guitar. It cuts sound holes. It makes fretboards. So all the basic parts are made on this machine before we start assembling the instrument.
Is the heart of a Huss & Dalton guitar in this machine or in those drawings?
The machine just makes... Yeah, I mean, we design the part exactly the way we want it, and then the machine just cranks out 100 of those parts, and they're all perfect the way we want them. And so if we want to change something, you just change the programming, and the machine will make it that way. So, yeah, the machine is just an efficient way to mill out the parts.
What difference does a sound peg that you... devise, what difference does that have to do in the final guitar over somebody else's sound peg?
There's no such thing as a sound peg, first of
all. There's some kind of peg.
Every part of a guitar is going to affect the sound, because a guitar is definitely a sum of the parts that make it up, so that the mass of each part, the size, the shape, the wood that it's made out of, how stiff that piece of wood is, everything affects the sound of the guitar in the end. So you just try to be consistent in the wood choices that you make, and that's why a CNC machine is so valuable, because it makes every part exactly the same, so you've taken that variable out of it. You've still got the variable of each piece of wood is different and stuff, and you have to make your judgments there. But the machine just helps you in the consistency.
All right, let's go on.
All right. So this is the assembly room where all those parts that we made on the CNC machine come together in here, and we build the guitars in here, basically. There's three of us that work up here. Each of us have our own responsibility. We do things in batches of six a week.
So can I tour the stations and just gawk?
Yep. So let's start over here
with
Dean. So Dean will join the tops up, do the brace work, and get those plates, the tops in the back, and get those plates ready for John in the following week. And then he also makes the fingerboards and gets things ready, does the preliminary work on the neck, shaping the peg heads. So when they come to John's station, the plates are ready, and he's going to assemble the body. He bends the side wood in these jigs here, use heat and moisture to bend the wood into shape, and then everything goes into a mold, and the guitars are built inside a mold, so they maintain their shape throughout the building process. And he'll glue the top and the back on and complete the box, and then do the decorative work, which he's doing now, the binding work, which is the edging around to match the rosette that's in the top, and then scrape and sand out the bodies and finish out the bodies, basically, and get them ready for their necks.
What's your reaction to when somebody says, "Oh, Huss & Dalton guitars," They're just the greatest, and you are the Huss.
That's always kind of fun. I was down in Georgia playing at a...
You blushed a little.
Yeah. I was playing at a party in Georgia, a Halloween party, and I was playing a Huss and Dalton guitar, obviously, and a guy came up to me and said, "Oh, how do you like your Huss and Dalton?" And I said, "Oh, I like it all right." And he said, "Oh, I've got one too. I love it." And I said, "Well, I'm Jeff Huss."
The moments we treasure.
Yeah.
All right, where do we go next?
The fingerboards get glued on the necks, and they get fit to the bodies, and then they come over here, and the final fitting is done. The relationship of the neck to the body is very important. The angles will determine the height of the strings and all the playability issues and stuff. So that's a real a lot of finesse there, getting the neck in there just right. And then everything is sanded out. Inlay work is done on the fingerboard and on the peghead. And they're all sanded out and prepared for the finish room downstairs.
Is it hand sanding, machine sanding?
Lots of hand sanding. You do as much machine sanding as you can through the process, but everybody in here is sanding all the time. That's basically what we do, is take a piece of wood and sand it until it looks like a guitar.
Can we go to the finish room?
Yep.
I don't want to inject dust into anything.
So the batch will come down here and spend a week in the finish room. The spray booth is here. He's in there spraying right now. He'll do the first day they come down here, they'll get a sealer coat, and then anything that needs to be stained, mahoganies get stained. They'll be stained and a paste wood filler to fill the pores so the finish lays on smoother and quicker. And then they go through the spray booth for 3 or 4 days. Some of them take 4 days. They'll get 3 coats a day, so they'll end up with either 9 or 12 coats of a urethane lacquer.
Is it a special spray booth?
Yeah. We can look in
here. It's going to be stinky, though. He's spraying.
Oh, okay. I'll get my mask.
It's fogged in there. So he's spraying. It's like a nitrocellulose lacquer, except it's a synthetic. There's stink in there. They come out, and the finish will cure. It takes a couple days for the finish to cure, and then they're ready to be buffed out. It comes out of the finish room, you know, kind of rough and orange peely. And so then Ken here will do the buffing on them. And he'll start out with a 800 grit sandpaper and work up to a 2500 grit sandpaper over the whole surface, and that's all handwork, basically. He does some rough machine sanding to start with, but it's a lot of handwork. And then he'll end up by buffing on the buffing wheels here with medium and a fine buffing compound and polish it out to a mirror finish.
All right. Oh, is there more? There's more.
Oh,
yes.
So they come out. The neck and the body have been finished separately, and they come out and they get attached. The neck is, we use a bolt-on neck design where there's 2 bolts going into the heel, and then the fingerboard extender is glued on and the bridge is glued on. And so they'll get assembled like this, and then we have to install the frets and then do all the setup work where you install the tuners and the nut and the saddle and all that, and then string it up and play it and make sure all the adjustments are right, the string height and all that.
You do string it up and play it?
Yep. Okay. That happens in here.
Whose job is that?
Mark Dalton does all the setup work, which... There aren't any strung up in here, but yeah, they come in here and he'll install the tuners and go from there.
Do you have a finished guitar here?
This one is pretty interesting. This is wood from Monticello. It's from a poplar tree that grew on the grounds of Monticello that it can't be proven completely because the tree was hollow, but all the evidence suggests that Thomas Jefferson himself planted this poplar. In his journal, there's an entry that there he planted a tulip poplar tree in the spot where this tree was. And the first photographs of Monticello in like 1870 show what looks like a 50 to 60-year-old poplar tree in that spot. They just had to take it down about 3 years ago. So we got some of this wood.
How'd you get it?
People up at Monticello that knew that we were building guitars, and they were giving the wood to craftspeople to do various things. There's a guy in Crozet that turns these beautiful bowls out of some of it, and they sell it through the Monticello Foundation. So it's tulip hopping. Mm-hmm. See, there's a little wood burning thing of Monticello in the tree. That's where the tree was, right outside his bedroom window. And and it's all made of Virginia woods. Everything in this guitar is Virginia wood. So walnut neck and a red spruce top from Virginia.
If somebody had to buy it, they should contact
Monticello. Yeah, or contact us. This is the second one. The first one sold to a gentleman up in New Jersey. His wife bought it for him for his 60th birthday, along with the James Taylor concert she had for him, the private James Taylor concert.
Us and Dalton Guitars are, as you might have guessed, a substantial investment in sound. That's Robin and Linda Williams playing their Huss and Daltons in this rendition of Twine with the Ringlets. You'll find a link to the Huss and Dalton website on the Spark page at WMRA.org.